The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Now, for the first and last time anywhere, it's the Wolfman Jack Christmas album. That's right, the master of Merry Muses himself, and a collection of his all-time favorite Christmas sayings. No music, no atmosphere of Yuletide fun, just the jolly old Wolfman himself. You'll hear him say,
Noel.
And?
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la, la-la-la-la.
It's a treasure for any collector of Christmas vinyl. You even get his merry old laugh, often mistaken for that of Santa Claus. And if you act now, we'll send you absolutely free another album called Wolfman Jack Trimming His Christmas Tree. It features 567 great sounds as the Wolfman puts all sorts of trimmings on his 40-foot evergreen.
Little tree here, little tree here, putting more balls on the tree. More balls.
Yes, you'll even hear him fall as he tries to put the top piece on. Order now. Here's how to order. Just leave $22.95 in cash under an oak tree with a dog marked, I want the Wolfman stuff, and return in 3 days. That's the Wolfman Jack Christmas album. $43.88, cassettes $55.50. Act now.
All right. Yes, indeed.
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Capella.
Winter by William Shakespeare. When icicles hang by the wall, and Dick the shepherd blows his nail, and Tom bears logs into the hall, and milk comes frozen home in pail, when blood is nipped and ways be foul, then nightly sings the staring owl, to who? To wit, to who? A merry note, while greasy Joan doth keel the pot. When all aloud the window blow, and coughing drowns the parson's saw, and birds sit brooding in the snow, and Marion's nose looks red and raw. When roasted crabs hiss in the bowl, then nightly sings the staring owl, to who? To wit, to who? A merry note, while greasy John doth keel the pot.
Listening to Frank Capella.
Look out! Because here it comes. I thought I saw it coming. I just had this ringing in my ears that said, here it comes. I know I hear it. I know it's on the way. Here it comes, and I'm telling you, in this event, in that event, and in all events, certainly in this event, what is it? I think it's this, wait, not in that case, in this case, and in every case, coming up. Probably one of the more serious things I ever did in my life. Without my pants. So come on! Everyone, you will be there, and we will be there with you when you are there. What is it?
Cthulhu Chronicles.
Could be nothing more. Of broadcasting, the number one guy, the one man, the one kid, the one human who does it correctly. You know what I mean by correct? I mean we just do it. And at no agenda, we have no particular thing to say. It just comes out. My name is Frank Atola, the man whose name adorns the title of this show. And if you want to know, then you better listen. I'm in conversation with Craig Lehner on this show. We're going to talk about the things that we think and express. Stay with us. From Ice Cap to Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Montbello, and into every bordello. I didn't realize this, but that was three references to Shakespeare. I didn't even realize that was happening. God, I love references, symbols, allegories, metaphors, metagories, and allophores. I love them, love them, love them. You know that if you've listened to this show. If you haven't listened to this show, you're in for something. I don't know why or how you would fall into a clicking of a mouse or something and find the show if you didn't know the show existed. I don't know how anybody finds it. Maybe they know my name or they look up my number. They know my name. Maybe they, and there's probably a million different ways and many of them are inconsequential and most of them are unimportant and by chance. I don't think people go looking for me, searching, as they say on the internet. But if you haven't heard the show before, then you're in for something because it does it right. Now I'm not saying that people that there's right and wrong in all this stuff. Just that the initial essential form of expression comes from the moment and it comes right out. And so we pick a topic and we necessarily don't stay at that topic. We move along. We go with life as it goes, moment by moment by moment. And even when we have guests, like we have tonight, Craig Lehner was on once before pump up his book, hawk his book, pump his book, prompt his book. I don't talk like, you know, he shouldn't do that because I sure as hell do it. And we try to sell some books because it's not too late for a holiday gifts, which you can get books, Craig. But we're going to talk about writing. Now, Craig looks more like a writer than do I. And if you see on the CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com, or if you're over there on Facebook, where they have already stolen just about everything. And let me tell you something about this Facebook stuff while we're at it. And we are at it, because from the very beginning, and I was one of the first people over there. And by first, I mean what? In the 10,000, you know, the first 10,000 or what have you. An absolutely lovely girl. I wonder what happened to her. I'm not even going to mention her name. But we were friends on Facebook. No, we weren't friends on Facebook. We were friends, I think we were friends on that MySpace. Or anyway, you know, I was on, using all these social media, sites. As promotion from the very beginning of the broadband, and now we're all on the interweb, and we all got a computer type time. And she said, that's what she said. She said, "Hey, Frank, come on over to this new place called Facebook." You know, and I said, "Okay, one more. I'll go on one more social media site." And they went over there. And it said, you know, put your pictures here and stuff. And back then, you know, it was ready to bury MySpace, which it did. And everybody went over to Facebook. And it was a different place. It was an early new place. And they were still trying to figure out over there, Facebook, what is this? And, well, I'll tell you what, it's a gold mine because you don't have to put anything. You don't have to do anything, you people who made the website. Because the people that go onto the website will do it. It would be a member generated, whatever. I think they come up with a term for that. A member generated content or whatever they called that. And I went on, but I said, you know, look, this is still just going to be another promotional spot. So very few things that were personal from the beginning, because I was well aware of what could happen. And I warned a lot of people. I said, look out, when you go to these sites, and even when you start your own site, take it easy. This web thing is growing to biblical proportions. And this, and already there was hacking and there were people stealing things, right? So be careful. Go on there as a character of yourself. I use my real name. I didn't say, like, you know, it's me, Hackjaw Milligan or something. I went on as me, and I've been my own name person all the time, but no one really knows me from the social media sites, because I've been flippant. I've not lied, but I've created an image for myself. And if you go to my photos on Facebook, you know, you won't see things that are nothing that I don't want anybody to see. So it's obviously, if it's nothing I don't want anybody to see, it's nothing I don't that it's anything that someone could steal, because it doesn't matter. I've been involved with people who have had their identity stolen well before there was the internet. I'm talking like people, yes. And those stories can go on and on and on and on, but I'm not going to tell you them, and maybe I never will, of all the stories I have told. Careful. So I'm not surprised at all that Facebook, all this stuff went on, because you can see how it changed over the years. And maybe you haven't seen how it changed, because you haven't been one of the people who have been there from the beginning. You got on there for any other reasons. And a lot of people left, younger people left, because it's just not the place to be anymore. And then when mobile phones came about, there were certainly other places to go. To Snapchat, the chats, Minute, or Snap, or whatever it is. All the things, the Instagram, InstaSnap, Snap your Instas, and all that stuff. So don't be surprised. And you know, go in there and take stuff out. You don't need, people don't need to know certain things. And it's okay to lead people on and make yourself an image of yourself. You don't have to. Okay? So that's the whole Facebook thing. And I don't know why I said that, other than the fact that you can get me and be my pal on Friend, because I don't care. I don't even go there a lot anymore. I used to go there a lot. And thank you, C. I'll just call her C. She introduced me to Facebook and many other delights, like pumpkin. Forget it. We don't need to talk about that. So this was what happens with this social stuff and everything else. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show. This is Cotolo Chronicles. And what we're going to do, we're going to talk with Craig, who is a writer. And I'm going to find out a little bit more about him. And this is a good contrast, who has not done anything in his life. And Craig was a teacher. And you know how, if you know, like I said, if you know how, you don't know if you haven't listened to the show for years or even months. But I really think teachers are, you know, get the short end of any stick. Where did that arrive? I think that came from picking straws, short end of the straw, but make him a stick, short end of the stick. Well, who gets the long end of the stick? Generated by questions, questions, curiosity, and of course, pop culture. This is Cotolo Chronicles, heading toward Y2K plus, what's the next one? My gosh, 19. Okay. Which means we are over. Well, okay, it doesn't matter. So there were, let me say this also, and that is that I apologize to a couple of people who wrote into me and said, they didn't say anything when they wrote. They wrote into me and said, see, there's a, that's, is that, what is that called then? They wrote to me that it would be great if I played the show about me and my father putting up Christmas decorations at our Brooklyn, New York home way back in the 60s. And I did it once before, and I didn't do it this time because I had a number of things went on, and I did not even know I would be here on this night to do the show live as I'm doing it. And of course, you can hear this show on when it's posted on Juiced blogtalk.com, and you can hear this show on other stations throughout the week. True Talk Radio twice a day for 5 days a week. And other, you know, go to CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com. But I'm sorry that I did not get that. Ooh, that was a weird. Oh, that was probably my stomach, and it came all the way through the microphone. But like, I'm sorry I didn't get that show rolling here. It's funny at any given time. Anybody who wants it, I'd be glad to send you a condensed MP3 if your email can take it. I'm gonna find it. I don't know. I could probably find it, but I didn't have the time to go find it. And, I'll send it to you personally. How's that? I mean, that's good, because I don't care. As long as you don't sell time on it, and what are you going to do with it? You see, that's what I mean. It's another thing about the interweb. You know? There's certain things you just don't have to protect. In any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, that's the way that goes. So I apologize for that. And we don't do themed shows. We never did themed shows based on holidays or... we didn't have, oh, it's time for our Halloween show. Everybody who got into internet radio copied what they heard and knew. That's its inspiration. I'm not an inspiration. It's not, I don't know what to call it. It's not inspiration. It's, who is it? What is it? People you like and what have you. People who wanted to get into radio, couldn't get into radio, and then got into internet radio. All they did was take all the things that they thought regular radio did and said, we'll do it on internet radio. Except we'll be able to use curse words, because nobody ever stopped. And that's where this show became different too, because we're so rare in all the years and the decades that we have been on. You can count on your left hand the amount of times I personally dropped an F-bomb. Now, there have been, you know, there's been language here and there that certainly we give a parental guidance alert. Mainly, we didn't always do that, but, and we only do that basically because now, you know, everybody has access to the internet. And if you happen to be one of the people who don't know about the show and you knock into it, but that's what everybody did when they first came in. I didn't do that. I said, I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do is something different, something real. And that's what I did. And that's what I've been doing. So there. and it's not that nobody else, and still nobody's picked up on it and has done it. I'm amazed at that, because I encouraged and told everyone I believed that this could easily be done by so many people. Well, the artist D has done some, probably the closest thing to what I do at various times. Speaking of the artist, I want to mention this. What is next week? I only got to get 27. Oh, that's it. That's it. It's next week, isn't it? Next week. Let me look at this calendar. By cracky. It is next week. The Roll Call from the Bone Garden. It's a special show that the artist D and I have done for years. I keep forgetting who did it before that. It's probably Larry and maybe a couple. We had some other people hanging around here. That's a kind way of saying it. But anyway, the artist D and I will be doing the Roll Call from the Bone Garden. Every year we do it. It's the last Thursday before the end of the year. The last show. Well, it's the last Thursday before the end of the year. And we will do a roll call. We will mention all the people from January through up until that moment that we know who have passed into the great unknown, into the silence, the old echoing silence of whatever. And not just the ones that you hear on all these other shows. So here again, okay, Cthulhu Chronicles has just led the way. Nobody does it like this. We will mention people. And this is like a celebratory thing. We're not making fun of, but never laugh at people who have passed. Maybe Hitler, but he didn't die. We weren't doing a show during that time. So I think Obama, not Obama, he didn't, gosh, ooh, please. But, you know, I always got that, you know, Osama. It's always been too close and too easy to say those two names. But we'll have a great list of celebrities in all walks of life, and many of them who you don't know and didn't know. And you say, like, well, so they're celebrities? Yes, in their field, they're celebrities. I have a famous tennis person who's not that famous that he or she crosses over into pop culture's main list. We will talk about him or her. We'll talk about mountain climbers, scientists, and some of the lesser-known people of the arts are all included, and we try to get as many as we can. Now, we've always been caught between the beginning of the show and the end of the show, the 2 hours, because other things have gone on after, and other shows, and other things have happened after my show, which is 2 hours. But, you know, we can now, because it's open-ended, until Tom Savino hopefully comes back and continues with Savino Veritas, and he'll be on the show. But here's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if we're not done in the 2 hours, D and I, we will do some more. We'll just go until we're done. So get ready for this roll call from the Bone Garden with me and D, an open-ended 2 hours, maybe more. And you will hear about many, many people you did not know about will be getting. Now, remember, when we're doing this, it's a celebration of their lives. It's also because of the number of people we do and the nature of the people we talk about who have passed. It's they may not have been so recognized through the year outside of whatever particular area they excelled. So, it'll be great. Roll call from the Bone Garden. You'll know it's happening because you can check out CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com and as I mentioned, Facebook Frank Catolo. I think it's Frank dot. I don't know why there's a dot in between names instead of an underscore. Hey, speaking of that, 148.ca/Frank. I have my look at. Well, is it the end? I don't even know, because I'm so ahead. I am so far ahead on my blog on the 148.ca. True, it's true. The entire year of 2019 is in the queue. Isn't that amazing? So I don't remember what I did when I did. I think I did forecasts. Do I do forecasts? I guess I could look. Let me look. I can look really quickly. There's nothing says I can't. My show. Craig is 148.ca, C-A, for Canada, right? /Frank, F-R-A-N-K. And if you go there, what did I do? Just hit it? Yeah. Okay. An ode to 2018. We look back over the 12 months just passed, and we realize we have forgotten so much of what happened, blah, blah, blah. The ultimate recap of 2018. Farewell, fine annum. Annum. It's annum, not annum. it's a speech that I gave to in a few small towns across North America as an homage to the passing year. So it's not, did you hear that? I don't know if you heard that's my stomach and then going up there and then. It's not a, predictions. There are probably predictions somewhere else. Maybe next week are predictions. Maybe I did one more. But this is a speech for 2018 that I gave to a number of little towns that said, come here, Frank, and give me a speech. Stop it. What is going on with this? Not secure. It's not secure. One for sure it's secure. Don't give me that. Turn that down. I have here's what I'm going to do now. Because before I get Craig, what am I going to do here? I'm going to get this little thing out. It's I'm going to do this now as opposed to, later. And I could, that way I could run off to the bathroom. Bathroom, that's Brooklyn bathroom. Where is it? You'll see, wait, bum, 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 bum. What was that? It's, HT Express. We'll do the HT Express right now. And then when I come back after the HT Express, we'll get Craig. On the Skype. This is Catolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Catolo. Well, this will tell you too.
Pirates.
All aboard! All aboard!
Chronicles. That's, stuck that in there so that I could do a little business in the meantime. Because we're not going to have any breaks. Now, Craig and I are just going to go until we don't want to go anymore, talk-wise. And we're going to talk about things. And we're going to sell some books. But, you know, I do that all the time anyway. I want you to go buy some books. It's not too late, of course. Amazon, Frank Cotolo, a couple of books there. Lulu.com, shorter books. And you can get them on digital. You know, if you buy the three digital shorter books, which are a little like the chat books, that's what they call them, you know. I don't know how else to describe them other than how the technical name for a book in that shape and that size. Not necessarily that length. It's got a lot of pages. It's got a lot of writing in it. But it's not like a thick book. It's not a novel. It's a whole bunch of stories in each one. And especially popular there is The Return of Turk Bahrain, which someday will be turned into that web series that we that we gave them the right to do, but they haven't done. Oh, boy. You know, it's we're going to talk about being an author and what it's about and what to expect and what to be. But anyway, go get those books of course, Craig Lehner's book is This Was Never About Basketball. It's for young adults. I can't write young adult books, although if young adults like to read my books, you know, bless them. I know, what can I say? But Craig has that book, and you can get that. If you have a young adult in the house, and because it's important that they read. And that probably reading Craig's book and not my books, you can read my books, will give them more... well, I don't know. You know, kids grow up so quickly, and they're so mature that perhaps a book like Sweet Shepherd... I think, you know, no one has told me this, but I can imagine that there are younger adults who would find a book like that particularly creepy. I'm not going to say anything else about it. Now, a book like Man of La Mancha, not Mancha, Mantra, which is funny, educational, about Portugal and Brazil and stuff, all that stuff, and funny, and romantic, and funny. You know, that's a great book to read. Contemporary. And, what else is over there? License to Skill is just a laugh riot. I mean, it is a laugh riot and is still walking around, bouncing around, the desks of producers in Hollywood, from the script, which was written by, Peggy Robinson and myself. But, you know, it really should be a series. It should be made into prestige television. That's what they call all this new stuff now. These series, they take books and they make them in 8 hours. They couldn't make a movie in 8 hours. Well, they could, but who's going to watch it, right? The competition between media entertainment and education and whatever books and those things do. Versions, renditions. I'm not even going to talk about the Merriam-Webster word of the year, because I think that's just a promotional thing. What I'm going to do is talk with Mr. Craig Lehner, who I'm going to get on the phone right now. And I got my, he's ready. I can call him right now on his, let's see, I don't want this to go too loud. There it goes. Bing, 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 bing. There's that. That's your Skype sound.
Hello, it's Craig.
Hello, Craig. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Frank, you're coming in really well. It's good to hear your voice.
So, well, it's good to be heard, because you never know in this world of radio who the hell's out there listening.
Well, that's the truth right there. I got to tell you, I just got off the phone with my 92-year-old book publicist, Erwin Zucker, believe it or not.
Oh, guy, Erwin, I forgot to send him a little note and say happy holidays. But how is Erwin? I haven't heard from him in a while.
He's fine. He told me that the topic of today's show was going to be paranormal wagering strategies and harness racing. And I think he was working me. I don't know. What do you think?
This goes to show Mr. Zucker has all his senses and facilities, because I never told him anything about anything I do, and yet he found out.
He's a wise guy. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, he died. Yeah, he went and got. And now this is not a picture of him on your Skype. No one can see this anyway. This
that's my alter ego right there.
Yeah, that's a good one. Let me tell you the truth, because I don't always have to, but when I went and got your picture and I tossed it on Facebook to promote this, as I do every week, I forgot what you looked like in the meantime.
Goodness, well, I'm quite handsome. I think we've established that.
Yeah, but so I'm looking through I'm looking through these photos, and the one with the pipe, it stuck out so much because it said intelligentsia, it said writer, it said author. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I can tell you that in preparation for this show tonight, I am wearing a corduroy sports coat with the leather patches on the elbows. I am smoking the pipe, or at least holding it anyway.
Oh, good. Good.
I'm sipping an ice cold Brazilian cachaça. Uh-huh. I stopped eating celery about an hour ago.
Forever?
No, just for the show.
Oh, okay.
And I've thrown another log into the firewalk pit here in my office, so I believe I'm ready to go.
And indeed, I said to myself, let's get Craig on again, because last time we spoke mostly about the book, and I like to talk about writing. I really enjoy talking to other people who understand and write, and you're almost fresh to the whole thing. It's your first novel.
Yeah, took me quite a while to pull it all together.
Yeah, so the things are, I said, let's just sit here for as long as it takes, as long as we want, and talk about writing and what we think about it and how we deal with it. I mean, that's why, and I said, let's talk to Craig, because, I'll tell you something else, another reason why too, because I don't think you've, I know you haven't written, really haven't written a long time in your life.
Well, I worked as a sports writer, did a lot of corporate writing.
Yeah.
This is sports journalism, but nothing like sitting down and hunkering and throwing down 65,000 words, all at one time.
So I'm saying you're not as tainted as am I.
Okay.
You still have that fresh, almost hopeful. And then again, that's just what I'm thinking. For all I know, you're a dark and desperate human being. I don't know. So I figured this is a good contrast, because we are, in a sense, even though we're both writers, because of who we are and where, what we do and have done, we are a unity of opposites, right?
That's correct. Kindred spirits of the written word, opposite sides of the typewriter carriage.
Yeah, typewriter. Don't say that. Nobody knows. I often explain to people ways that We used to put words onto paper other than writing, because nobody knows those anymore. Do you still have a typewriter? You still do?
It's in the closet and way in the back of the house somewhere.
Yeah, the one I have left is a little one that used to, it's in a suitcase. You know those? Remember those?
Yep.
But so anyway, here we are on Cthulhu Chronicles. Craig Lehner, let's just do the promotion for the book first. I was telling everyone before I called you that if you have a young adult in the house or you know somebody who is a young adult and you won't get into trouble giving that person a gift, then the book of by Craig, This Was Never About Basketball, is good, because I know that's the other thing about Unity of Opposites. I will never write a young adult book. I don't even know where to begin. I'm tainted. I've been, there's no way I could understand the format. You, on the other hand, have done constructive, important things in your life. You've been a teacher, right?
Well, actually, I've worked in human resources management for a lot of years. I sit on the board of directors of the Cal State Northridge Journalism Alumni Association, where I mentor young student journalists, but I've never actually taught in a formal setting.
Yeah, but that's like the stuff you just said, Dan. A resume is terrific. I don't have, I don't know about human resources, so I don't know. I'm not on the board of anything other than the fact that people get bored of me. That's about it. So you have a distinction that I don't have. So we are, in a sense, from different molds. And so I couldn't do that. So I'm telling everyone, young adult books. And, the thing I respect, I'd never looked at the enormity of that category until we talked, and I went to Bookbusters or whatever I go. And there's a huge section for teen, I know they call it a bunch of different things, right?
Well, yeah, it's got several different names. Essentially, young adult. There's a lot of talented writers working in this field, and there's, of course, a lot of competition. I feel like I'm in good company, that's for sure.
Well, just remember what Hemingway said, right? Every one of those writers is your enemy. Now you say you're in good company, but they want themselves, they come first.
Yeah, I gotta say, Frank, it's really hard for me to look at it that way. And
how come?
Just inherently, it's not in my nature to do that. As an HR guy, I'm more about putting people in the room and figuring out what the problem is and trying to solve it.
This is why I think it's great that we talk, because understanding's not the word. Help me out. You're a writer.
Experience,
It's not I, even I that. Okay. Well, you know what I'm talking about. We're different and we do that and you do. So, and I'm not saying that as if, I mean, I admire, competition to an extent, right? I mean, it's good to have competition. Because you got comparisons, but you're right that there are a lot of people writing that. Do you know of any people who are writing in your in that genre who have written outside of that genre fiction?
Not by name, but I have read about authors who go in and out of that genre. I mean, it does happen. These are people who've written for a lot of years, and they're able to make that transition quite smoothly.
Yes, but people who have written for years, just because you've written for years doesn't mean you're able to make any kind of transition as well as you know about writing. And I know I've done things. I wrote speeches. It seems like whatever I did that wasn't fiction, I was able to, and I didn't know it half the time. I was putting myself in there, and I was not doing it the way it was supposed to be done. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, there's a certain formula that people like to follow, and I certainly try to do that in my work.
So in the teen, you learned about the teen genre by, how many teen books did you read before?
Yeah, a couple of dozen. I didn't overdo it. But beyond that, though, I really didn't know what I was doing when I started, so I had the good sense to read 8 different books and how to write a book before I even wrote the first chapter.
Now, yeah, and there's where we part ways again, too. I'm really skeptical after reading how to write books, and this happened from the very beginning. I was like, that there is a way to do something. Look, we all know format. I think the thing that helped me the most was just learn the basic construct of drama, and then you could do anything, you know?
Yeah, there's a certain amount of wisdom involved in embracing what you think might work for you and then just chucking the rest. And maybe 20% of what I read I really hung on to, and the rest of it didn't seem to apply.
Yeah, because ultimately a writer has his or her own voice, and it takes you I'm not a prodigy. Okay, it took me a long time to find my voice, because I think what we do as writers is we like writers. Writers inspire us to write. Huh? Didn't writers inspire you to write?
Really? Of course. Yeah, that's how we got our start.
So, but in the beginning, because you don't have a voice, you know, there's an old thing in show business. When I was writing jokes, someone said to me and said, "Why are you busting your nuts? Always trying to write original jokes." I said, "Well, I don't steal." And he says, "Listen, you take a form and you twist it around. The point is this: amateurs imitate, professionals steal."
Yeah, there's quite a bit of truth to that.
And then from there on, I started, finding my own voice in other people, in the inspiration. It's like, why would this person, you know? So when I got a book that said, there's a very famous book about screenplays, and I'm not a guy who likes to write, plays and screenplays. I've done some work in it, but not alone. But, there was a named Sidney Fields, and when I was in Hollywood, everybody, we gotta read the Sidney Fields book. Read Sidney Fields, how to write a screenplay. He's got, you know, and he tells you what to do in terms of where things are supposed to be. But that's not writing. That's a form. That's like building the stage.
Yeah. You have to find your own voice, any way that you can. And a lot of times it's just through sheer luck or being in the right place at the right time when those ethereal ideas are coming through the air and you try to capture them.
Yeah. And knowing your voice when you hear it, this time, you wrote a lot of stuff, for this book, right? That you did away with. And then you look back and you go, who the hell was saying that? What was that there? Right?
Yeah. A good example of that is when I sent it off to my editor, and, one passage in particular, I think I spent 3 days trying to fine tune and get it just right. And I got it back with a big line through it. Said, yeah, we don't need it. Reader already knows this. Yeah, but probably about maybe 5 or 6% of what I wrote ended up on the cutting room floor.
The best editors, although I don't really have a lot of interaction with editors, because I really feel like when I get down, I get down. This is only recently, Joe. I mean, I've spent, I don't know, well, when I say recent, I've been doing this since I'm like 12, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, one way or another. I get combative because I understand what I'm saying, and I understand when it's put and in the context. Now, when you have an editor, is your editor a writer?
No, primarily she's an editor.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, she's on the East Coast, 4.5 decades in the young adult book industry. When I tracked her down, she was retired, working out of her Manhattan apartment. And I wrote her an email, and she said, yeah. Sounds interesting. Send it to me.
So
I deferred to her because she's just been there, been through the wars, and she knows what people like to read. So I really had to give in to most of what she told me.
Sure. But how did you feel when you worked something like 4 days, and then before you gave it to her and she put a line through it, you thought you had it, right?
Yeah. Frustration, I guess, is the word. But then the wisdom has to come in, and you have to realize that, okay, well, got to let go of it. Kill the babies, as the saying goes, and just move on.
Yeah, I have trouble when somebody doesn't give me a really good reason for that, because I don't feel like that there's so much that isn't extraneous, especially in fiction. And you could still keep the form and be able to stray here and there. I don't know. Well, anyway, you know, tell us about, since then, and that's out now and going around, and what are you writing?
Well, I'm working on the sequel right now. I'm picking up exactly where that book left off, right down to the minute, and throwing down. I had a bit of an epiphany when it came to the hook for the story and just ran with that.
So, and you didn't think when you wrote that, did you think you were going to continue with those characters and stuff?
You know, not until the very end. As I got towards the final chapters, I thought, maybe I can keep this going. So I left the door a little bit ajar in the final chapter to give myself some wiggle room. And then after a couple of months of thinking about it, I decided to go back in.
So you didn't know where it was going or didn't have a, you had an idea that it would, it might move on from there.
Right. Yeah. But I didn't know where. And so I'm thinking about a story. I'm a writer without a story at this point. And I'm driving to College of the Canyons up north from where I live to a Sunday farmer's market.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, just to get some vegetables. And my wife usually comes with me, but she was under the weather, so she stayed home. So I drove up there, made the rounds. I'm coming back down the freeway, down the 405, because this is California. We name our freeways by the number. And off to the left as I'm coming into the valley, San Fernando Valley, is a place called Eden Memorial Cemetery. And that's where my dad was laid to rest in 2002. So every once in a while, I'll pull off the freeway and cruise in there and have a conversation with him. And so I did it on that day. Mm-hmm. And so I walked up to where he was, where his headstone was, sat down, placed my hand over it, and just sort of had this conversation with him, you know, in my head and also kind of out loud. And towards the end of it, I said, "Hey, Dad, you know, I'm kind of struggling with my story right now. If you hear of anything from the hereafter, I'd appreciate you passing it along." So I got back in my car, got on the 118. I'm heading west, and I started to get this idea as I'm driving. And by the time I almost got home, I had it fully formed. And then the phone rings in my car, and it's my wife. And she asked me to stop by the market to pick up this thing called a wellness shot, where they squeeze together a ginger and cayenne pepper and lemon juice and some apple juice, sort of like an energy boost to help her feel better. Uh-huh. So I pull into the market. I walk in and I realize it's Super Bowl Sunday and the place is a zoo. It's six people deep in line. I order the drink. They say it'll be 10 minutes. So I grab a basket. I'm picking up some odds and ends from the hot food bar. I grab the thing finally. I go to check out. The girl rings me up and says that'll be 1926. And I looked at her and went in disbelief. 1926 was the year my father was born.
Okay.
And so the things that I bought added up to his birth year, and that was a shocking thing to have happened for me after getting this ethereal message from the hereafter about what my story idea might be. So went home and just started to outline, and I'm about to, a little bit over halfway on the first draft right now.
That's good. How'd you thank your dad?
You know, I thank him every day like we do, you know, for those people that have dropped some wisdom off and have left us.
Go ahead. What?
I was going to say, I have an autistic character in the book. His name is Lawrence. And I can say this much about it, that he's going to be using advanced biomathematics to try and prove that human consciousness is not tethered to the human brain.
More science fiction.
Yeah. But if you think about that, it's okay, then what's it tethered to? And, you know, where are we from? And all those questions are going to come up. And so I'm trying to corral that in a way that a young adult's going to deal with it. You know, I'm introducing a little bit of quantum mechanics, like introductory stuff, because we're going to talk about energy and how it can't be created or destroyed. And so when my main character's brother, you know, is killed in action in Afghanistan, what happened to him? And so we're going to talk about that.
Do you find those experiences, let's just call them experiences now and not get into beliefs or anything, those experiences, well, did you find that to be an uncommon experience with you?
It becomes common when I look for it. If I'm oblivious to it, then it doesn't come up.
So, which means you've been helped in you feel you've been helped in your writing from unavailably proven sources?
Yeah, I don't know who or what it is, but I just know it happens a lot in the shower. And my wife, God love her, she gave me this thing called Aqua Notes. It's like two suction cups and a pad of paper you can write on in the shower. And I get ideas in the shower all the time, and I'm just scribbling stuff with the water running up there. And the stuff just comes. And you, writers, here's the best advice I can give anybody listening who's a writer or who's had aspirations to be one. When things come up and you hear them, you have to write them down because they're fleeting and they don't come back.
This the listeners of the show through the years know that phrase more than anything, although you have to say it like Dr. Fablianek, my physics teacher in college, said it. And I'll tell you this, as you haven't been around, and maybe some new people have, but we had this teacher, it must have been physics. And he would make sure he'd say that, you know, everybody has to write it down, but he'd say it like this, write this down. That's how he'd say, write this down. And he would write on the chalkboard, and as he was writing, to make sure that you wrote it down, he erased it as he was writing. You had to write it down and fast. Quickly, I should say.
That's good training right there.
Write this down! That way you would know it, because we write down everything. And I know I tell everyone who listens to the show to get themselves a regular Mead notebook, one of those old-fashioned things that will always be sold. You know them as well as I do. Mm-hmm. One of those, although I emphasize it should be the wide, not college-ruled, wide-ruled. I don't know. You could get whatever you want. And when you hear things on the show, and tough I've talked to with, you know, I don't have time to annotate things I say and names and stuff. So I tell people, you know, like, just don't. And then later on, they could go to their search engine and find out what the heck we're talking about. So I write incredible. I'm always writing things down. I have notebooks all over the place for that. They're always coming. I don't get delivered messages from anywhere. And you feel that you're getting it from a specific source as your father. Of course, you went and sat there and talked with your father. But he's done it if you didn't go there, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So you know when he's giving you the message, right?
Well, I certainly took it that way and ran with it and did not look back. You know, I just assumed that it was the real deal.
Well, I mean, other times.
Oh, sorry. Well, give me the question again.
Okay. And other times you get inspired by, they deliver these messages from, I don't know, what do we call it? Beyond or wherever that energy source be, you know, wherever.
Okay.
Do you feel that you get them delivered to you?
Well, they certainly pass by, and it's up to me to grab them. And they usually, for me, they relate to the work that I'm doing at the time, as a means of sort of helping me through it. That's what I find.
So you don't have to sort things out.
Yeah, well, I've got a question for you along those same lines.
Sure.
Let's talk about Moon Over Gorgon.
Oh, wow, Moon Over Gorgon. That's right, you bought that, and thank you very much for doing that.
The Stop Eating Celery reference an hour before the show. That was a reference from your book, by the way.
Oh, how do you like them apples? You know, there's so much I've forgotten. Okay, let's talk about that because we've been telling everyone. Now, remember, I'm telling everyone, this is a good gift. You go to Amazon, Craig, and get his book there and give it. These are good gifts, especially for people. Go ahead. I'm sorry. What is it you have to say? No one ever asked me about these things. So go ahead.
I have a theory about that work that you produced, that you might have been locked in the sensory deprivation tank for about 5 days before someone sprung you loose and then the stream of consciousness followed.
Why do you say that?
There's just a lot going on. It's really, you come up with some things that I don't know where you find that stuff. It was just really a fun read. So maybe you can talk about your process a little bit because I'm really interested in knowing how you came up with this work.
I get every day, there's so much, I don't know if it's noise or whatever, that so much, goes on in my head. I usually, I make a joke out of it here, and I say that my subconscious and my conscious are, connected by saloon doors. Okay. There's no block there. These are saloon doors.
Okay.
And during the day, whenever, you know, a wind blows or something happens, my unconscious, where everything is stored in all those, you know, everything we see and read, right? Everything is stored in our files, in our brain. What happens is they come through. My unconscious, like, slips this stuff through. And so if I'm writing about, I'm trying to think, Well, if I'm writing about Gorgon and the sisters, and you know, if I'm writing about that, one thing will come out, like the names of some of those people who are just regular names.
Mm-hmm.
But then if one comes out, then the other ones come out. And I feel like it's all there. You see what I'm saying? And what I didn't understand about my voice in the beginning is that, it's a lot of voices and it's a lot of things that I've seen and heard and read. And I call upon those things, when I'm writing whatever it is I'm writing. So if you say, like, if you ask me a specific thing about that particular, the title story of that book, obviously I've, you know, when I was a kid, I read mythology. I tried to read Homer incredibly young, like the stupid thing to do. Try to read, you know, the Odyssey and the Iliad and, all those things. And apparently a lot of the stuff I, input, stayed there. So if I'm doing that particular area, and I'm in that territory, I just seem to know the stuff I know. I don't look things up.
Yeah, this thing's pretty intense. I think that people should go out and get this and read it right away.
This is all, there are, that is one of my favorites though. Although that style, in many of my books, certainly not the serious ones, but, in the ones that, take on serious things comically. A lot of that stuff exists. It's important when you're younger, you know, one way or another, when you be a writer or not, let's face it, we absorb, you know, gigantic, it's a terrible word that doesn't even go near the stuff that the information that we absorb, right? As humans, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to call upon that is, you know, to go into that personal library you have and to use that stuff in your voice. For instance, let's look at it like a sports thing. Let's look at it like, you know, basketball because you're basketball, right? You did.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay. The difference between one coach and another coach in terms of how they tell you to approach various elements of the game. That changes a lot, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And then how the players relate to that, not just the coach, but, you know, who they're coaching. It's really like a chemistry set in action.
So to have one coach is almost idiotic. If I was playing, and I know it's when I did some sports, I was always looking for all the different ways. I didn't want just hear one way, okay? When I was in music for a long time, and I swept up in that 60s thing when I was a kid and got into a band and, you know, did stuff. And I was amazed that most of my peers did not care where the stuff came from. For instance, in the 60s, I got all these, British guys playing the blues, right? Who's your favorite sick classic rock, they call it now, right?
Well, the one and only 10 years after with Alvin Lee.
Yeah, see that now that's the next generation, I think, after the original bunch that came in. But anyway, there, okay, so now 10 years after did a lot of the blues stuff, even if it wasn't original. They did a lot of the form, right?
Yeah, most of their work was, they wrote their own stuff, and a lot of it was ground in the blues, in American blues.
That's Alvin Lee, right?
Yeah, Alvin Lee was the lead singer, guitarist, and he wrote most of the material.
Right. So so you hear that and you go, well, that sounds fresh. You probably heard it, or I did, and I go like, well, that's Alvin Lee. So people would go around saying to me, in this case it was Clapton, in my case it was like, hey, nobody plays like he does, and look at what he does and everything. And I go, yeah, but where did he learn this? What did he do to do this? He does it because he's great. They even call him whatever they call him. They give all sorts of accolades to this guy, you know, and all he's doing is translating all the stuff that he learned to do in the blues. And it just comes out in his voice, but it's not that original, you say. So I went and did some research, and you know, I told a guy, I said, do you know that this guy, Robert Johnson, who's this like, oh, this black guy from way back, and because I read about it, I said, do you know he's the guy who did Crossroads? And then Clapton listened to him all the time. Who? They like, who? What? Who? You can't go, you know, and they were like, they made the hero, the person of their time. And they didn't understand the roots. Roots, I guess we're talking about roots here now.
Yeah, that's what we do, you know, when we take in art and listen to music and read books. Robert Johnson recorded in the 20s, and he was, as legend had it, he sold the soul of the devil for his blues prowess. It cost him his life.
That's the story they tagged onto him. So what I'm saying is, you know, where did I get this stuff? I get this stuff from all the things I never took anything for face value. Anything I heard that I liked, and some things that I watch or heard and I didn't like, but I would force myself through it to see if it met the standards of whatever that thing might be, a play, a thing, a movie, a song, whatever. But it all came from somewhere else, a combination, a mishmash of something else. So I always looked at where did you get that? Where'd you get that? You know, where is that? That's not original. It's original the way you put it together, but you know, I just don't know why people don't do that normally. I don't understand why no one who's an artist has an interest into where did this crap get started. I don't like making heroes out of almost anyone, but if you can talk about original, you know, no one's really original, but you really have to look at other things, not just style, is what I'm saying. So you're talking about Eric Clapton, you're talking about style. You're not talking about a good songwriter. You're talking about a guy who plays guitar the way he plays. But for some reason or another, they like him better. He's popularity, you know? It doesn't have to do with the substance. But the substance is that all that came before, all the forces that went into him were probably better.
Yeah, I mean, in the 60s, people were spray painting on the walls of the subways down there, Clapton is God.
They
actually believed it.
Yeah, that's the, I'm just using him as, but I was always shocked that these guys, and because of that, I learned so much more music and about so many different types of music and was able to make a living, because I didn't stop at, rock and roll or blues or whatever. And I went on, only because I was, anything that caught my attention. Now, the same thing goes for writing. I learned when I started to write more than I did anything else. And I said, oh, wow, that's where'd I get that? I don't even trust myself, Craig.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, that happens because you don't ever know when you're coming up with something that, you know, for years I was a joke writer for years. And to this day, I'll watch stand-up guys or I'll see guys even from my own period of time. And I'll go, I wrote that joke. I remember when I wrote, how does he know it? Well, because it's, you know, math tells you that, you know, you're not going to be, gifted an original idea. Anyone can think up certain things. You know, there are a lot of secret agent books before James Bond came along, you know, and all sorts of stuff. So I'm just a big mess of everything, the way I think, and all the stuff that was input, all the stuff in those years where Freud says, this is where you get everything, right here, you know? And I guess that's it. And if you lean towards certain things, I mean, I leaned towards comedy. I became a joke writer, for God's sake, you know? So that kind of stuff. But I never liked to, you know, one thing, or I always wanted to dance around because there's just too much out there to get stuck doing any one thing. But that's my voice. So if I was going to write about Moon Over Gorgon. That's all. And you know what I love to do? And even in the funny stuff, I love to put in, you know, metaphors and allegories and allophores and metagories and all sorts of junk, because I think that's really a fun part of writing.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I answered the question.
Well, you did a pretty good job of hitting it from all ends. You know,
okay.
I'd like to say I'm hoping that you've replaced the show's hub rail with short pylons at this point to mark the inside boundary of our conversation. You know, that way we'd have the option of pulling off maybe to the inside of the studio if one of us breaks stride or
boxes
with a tough question.
Yeah, it's amazing that you know anything about harness racing. That's great.
It always comes back to harness racing for you, for sure.
Well, no, it doesn't really go. No, it just so happens that I do a lot of that because – I made a lot of money doing it, and I know how to express it, you know? So, I mean, it's really, even I do, and a lot of the people, you know, in the business of harness racing, I am I'm not held in great revere?
Revere esteem or?
I'm not held in great esteem.
Uh-huh.
Because I broke mold, and I break molds in there. And because I add things, because people who aren't, like a person who goes to broadcasting school, starts saying things that they would never say with their real voice. So this really carries on into broadcasting too. How many times have you heard somebody say, especially young, like I said, when they're just starting out and they're just imitating, they have no idea that they don't have any confidence. You don't have any idea that your voice means something unique. You know, you don't. So you say things like, and now without further ado, and I was like, oh, who talks like that?
Well, Shakespeare for one, I guess.
Yeah, I know, but these people that I've, believe me, they have not read Shakespeare, as difficult as that may be. They're not there, you know, it's not an homage to the bard. What else in that book, where's the celery reference? Where was that?
Well, it's like in the third page. I've got it right here.
It's in page 10. Really?
Yeah. You should never eat celery an hour before walking on the embers. Don't ask me why. It just never works if you do that before a walk. And that was, Il Gluvia said that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, why celery? I don't know. I have no idea, but it seemed, you know, when you write something, goes back to now what you said about working a piece and then having it thrown out. When you write something and you know that's the line, that's it, you keep it and you'll fight for it, right?
Yeah, I get goosebumps when that stuff happens. I mean, it doesn't happen that often, but you know sometimes when you've written something that's like nails it. And the editor's going to have to work really hard to get me to bail on it.
Even when I do a lot of dialogue in my books, as you might have noticed. And when I'm doing a dialogue, I mean, I'm constantly just ripping out in time. So, no, he didn't say that. He says this. No, he said that. He said that. And I get a flow and I feel a rhythm. And so someone can't say to me, well, he wouldn't say that. And I said, well, then you haven't read who that character may be in any of this, because it doesn't. And you know, readers are the worst critics.
Yeah, they can be pretty harsh.
Tough stuff being a writer. Yeah.
Hey, when's the last time you had a guest on your show quote your own work to you?
I'm you know, I try to be humble. Yeah, you're right.
There's no need for it.
You know, what's great about that, though? The fact that, now who would have known? You think when I wrote that, I said, boy, I can't wait till people dig this celery line. I had no idea anyone would ever even look at that and have it stick with them. Why the heck did that stick with you? You're right.
I can incorporate that into my normal workflow throughout the day now when it comes to celery consumption.
And you're right. There's a lot of stuff in that little book. Really, there's a lot of stuff. And is that the book with the there's a character that I am in these books. I mean, I use when it's me and I'm speaking first person. There's a character and he's in that book. He talks about,
Phil Mentosaur?
No, not in that story.
Somebody who's referenced in the book?
Well, there's a first person. What else in there is first person? What else? That isn't first. The title story is not first person, right? There's got to be some first person pieces in there. I don't remember the various pieces, but.
Yeah, but there is. I think it kind of moves in and out a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know this book as well as you do.
I don't. Yeah, right. As well as I do. I'm asking you. I don't even remember what else was in it. I remember that story because that's the title story. I don't remember. And I don't have, like I said, I don't have any, few copies. I rarely, read myself.
My copy is autographed, as you know.
That's right. You have an autograph. I don't know what that's going to be worth, or ever, but it's worth what it's worth to you. It's fine with me.
Well, it'll be worth not very much as long as you're alive. How's that?
Oh, I know. That's true, right?
Yeah, that's how it works, unfortunately.
That stuff. And yet, not everybody who dies benefits from that. Most people don't, right?
Yeah, in more ways than one. That's a true statement.
So the point is, if I die tomorrow, what do you think? You think there's going to be like hordes of people up and now number one? It's never even got on the list, but now it's number one because he died. Here are all the books of Frank Cotola. It's not going to happen.
Are you kidding? This thing's going on eBay the next day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's staying there.
Yeah.
Nobody's
okay,
gonna.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So
I really enjoyed it, Frank. I wanted to tell you that. I was going to tell you in an email, but then this was a good opportunity to embarrass you in front of your listeners.
Well, I appreciate being embarrassed that way, and I'm glad you liked it because a lot of people, you know, who have read it, don't, because I jump around here and there, as you know. I don't really, but. So you can understand that, having read that, and I tell people to go and buy it and read it, but you can understand why I don't necessarily, I don't think I would work in a genre, like even science fiction, no less young adult, or, wait, that's not a genre. A young adult is, what is that called? Is young adult?
It's a genre, for sure.
Okay. In that genre, I couldn't imagine. Could you imagine what that voice would talk about? It's not good.
Yeah, it would be a tough sell, that's for sure. You know?
I do a weekly blog at 148.ca. That's the main place that picks up this show, and you know that I don't want to go into the history of it, but it's, you know, it's in Canada. And I do this blog, and it has all sorts of stuff in it that's like that. And I was just telling people because I promote it, and I want people to give traffic to SRN MediaWorks and the people who put it up there. I am completed. I do – it's once a week, and I'm through with 2019. It's done.
Where'd you get your ideas for that blog?
Right? It's like – I don't know. I get it from everything I see and everything I read or what have you. And I'm able to able to manufacture certain things like I did a series, a couple of blogs, 9 blogs or what have you. It's my life as a rodeo clown. And, so I just did, who would I, my character be? And what would he be? You know, so I did like 9 pieces of that. There goes 9 weeks right there, you know? And, I've done some other ones. So it's like, I really feel like no matter what you give me, whatever topic you give me, I could find a way to put it into my, I don't even know, my expression.
Yeah, I mean, we're all just, you and I are typists for whatever passes through the air and, you know, between our ears.
Yeah, I'm really interested too in this, this ethereal, should I use that word correctly? This ethereal source you keep making, reference to.
I don't know what else to call it. That's an interesting word to use because it tends to describe it, but, you know, you hear things in your head and, boy.
But what makes you think that the things in your head, and I'm not saying this, I don't want to be argumentative, I want to understand, how it works for you, how this force or energy or whatever it is works for you. How do you know it's stuff that's just not there, like I'm saying, that you've absorbed stuff that you don't, you can't, you know, spot, put your finger on or what have you, and then you're getting those ideas. How do you know it's not there?
I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea if that's the case or not. You know, when we go into meditation, sometimes I'll do this to calm myself down. And I always go in there and ask a question, and I listen for the response.
Wait a second. In meditation, you're not, you go ask a question, you ask, right? You think? You're not supposed to think in meditation. There's a Freudian slip.
Yeah, there was. Yeah. Well, in the privacy of my own head, in my head, I'll ask the question and listen for the response. And it's usually the pure thing. Now, was it already there or did it pass through the air? I don't know the answer to that. But I trust in the process.
Passing through the air, though, man, I want to try to understand, you know, how, describe this to me so that I understand it. It's not there. It's gliding through the air like what? I mean, I don't really understand that. Could we tune in? Is there a way to tune in to these things and hear them if you want to?
That's what I'm suggesting. You know, I guess it could come down to, are we just these, you know, these people, these beings that live and then die and get buried and that's that? Or, you know, do we live on? Does the essence of who we are pass along, keep moving at some point? And if there's enough of that moving around in other dimensions, if you will, then maybe that's what we're able to carve into, you know, if we have the antenna up.
But you're convinced that you're picking things, that it's hitting, it's stopping at you. It's passing a whole bunch of people, but it's that some of these things are stopping at you and specifically for what you need.
That's the way it works out for me. And I think that everyone has this ability. They just have to open up to it. It's not just relegated to you or me. It's just a matter of deciding that you're going to be open to it and then putting yourself in a position to receive it.
I've had people on the show who have gone in, who do and claim to, I'm going to say, do a lot of that kind of stuff more than other people. They claim to be able to get in touch with the untouchable or whatever, the things, the streams or what have you. And I'm absolutely, completely convinced that they're connecting. And I'm always asking them, you know, I don't understand why they get so defensive. One lady would never come on the show again because I mean, there are frauds out there too. We know that. But when something is brought to me, and this probably goes back to the same guy who wanted to know what the heck was Eric Clapton listening to, right? That same person. So if someone comes to me and says, I can talk to people who are dead. Let's just say that because they're in another dimension. I can go into that dimension and I can talk. Now I ask questions. I always want to know specific things. You know, it's like I find it hard to believe. If that's the word, because a belief is any, you know, not even believe, to, I don't even, what is the word for something you know? I mean, if you believe something, you don't have any particular proof of it, right?
Yeah. Boy, you know, it could be that whatever is going on is beyond our ability to comprehend it at another dimensional level. And so, you know, we apply rules that we know, establish rules to try to understand it, but we just can't get our arms around it because it's beyond us.
And yet it comes to us and translates to our ability to understand.
Yeah, that's the dichotomy right there.
That's not just a dichotomy. That's idiocy. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's when I start going like, wait a second. Sure, there are things we can't make sense about. But how does that stuff? So in other words, it takes a step down. We're on the bottom of this. Ladder of comprehension and dimension, right? We're like nothing. We don't, you know, unless we do something. You know, I got a lot of friends who went this way or that way with religion through the years. They went, you know, have you, you know what? I want to recommend, if you haven't seen a movie, I want to recommend
ahead.
A great movie, written great. It's humorous, but it says so much. Maybe you've seen it. It's called Defending Your Life.
I know of it. I have not seen it.
Okay. You know, the Albert Brooks and Meryl Streep. You know, okay. I think you must get this movie. It's, matter of fact, they were promoting it again because it's, I don't know, 35 years, whatever years it
is. From the 80s or so, isn't it? Around
yes.
there?
Yeah. It is, it's like one of all the movies of all time, and I've seen a lot of movies. It's like one of my top 10 movies.
This movie, okay. I've just written it down, and I'll be in search of.
Defending Your Life is, it's just brilliant, and wherever you got to pay for it, Netflix, Cineflix, Cinemax, Netmax, whatever it is, it's going to be worth it, even if you could get it. And you know, now they're starting to sell all the CDs and DVDs cheap now, because they're doing away with them all. They're all going to be nothing. There's going to be nothing anymore. And everything's going to be streaming, and so now you can get things like that in a bin for like the $3.99, $2.99 movies. You got to go through those things and find some. You might be able to find Defending Your Life.
I think you just did your listeners a solid right there, Frank.
I did what?
Did your listeners a solid with that information.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. I've told them, watch it. Go get them. Get everything you can now. That's why they're cheap. I told one guy at Best Buy, I said, hey, let me ask you a question. Why was this once worth $14? I said, this disc only cost 89 cents. I said, no. Well, it's old. They don't even know. It's like, you know, they had to do with royalties and things and stuff. I didn't even know. Where was I going with that? I don't know. Go Defending Your Life is, I'm just going to tell you this about it. I saw this movie and I said, I would love to believe this is it. Okay?
Okay. Were you a changed person as a result of the movie?
No, because I didn't believe it. The end of the last line of The Sun Also Rises?
No.
Which Hemingway wrote the book, and then over and over, and he spent weeks. I got to find this last, you know, or however he talked. I don't know how he talked. He's probably drinking when he talked. You know? And weeks and weeks and weeks, I had to find one line that could end this. And I'm big on first lines and last lines of books. Big. I'm big on that. Big. I am big on that. I love looking for that. Give it to me and then end it. But anyway, so he was, and he wrote someone, the woman says something. It's romantic and it's wonderful. And his character says, isn't it pretty to think so?
And that's yeah. Kind of caps it off, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, So I'm in that whole area, but I think you'll enjoy Defending Your Life because it'll bring up questions about, it'll give you some answers, and it'll bring up questions about these communication things and stuff, and it should, because remember, like you're saying too, I don't know, I just know it happens, right?
Yeah. You know, where do we come from is the question always on my mind. You know, you look out at the stars and there's billions of them out there. And, you know, I just like to explore the math and what might be going on and how we might be connected to it.
To the world, to the universe.
To what's out there beyond this planet.
Well, there's plenty.
Yeah.
We know that.
Some of this is going to be in the sequel that I'm writing. I'm trying to go deep for the young reader in a way that they could, you know, grasp onto, but be expanded at the same time.
I'm working on a series that I can't talk about because, you know, my agent is shopping it and stuff, and I'm still mounting a non-disclose agreement with it. But it's the first book, and it's a series, but it's the first world I went in, that I really went into. I mean, I don't do research and stuff, as I told you. I decided to do something new. So like, well, you know, I could write about this stuff, but there's got to be a certain amount of authenticity to it. And I don't know this world. So I have to go in there and trust that I do absorb a lot of things, you know, and it has a lasting effect on me. That's all I'll say. And I can't disconnect from this world now, and I understand it more. And, I never did that. And what I'm leading up to is when you decided to do teen fiction, did you further your knowledge of teens and their, you know, their ways, their language, their things, or did you just have enough of that absorbed through the years, in your profession?
Yeah, I can confess I did absolutely no research into what teens are thinking these days. I got back into my 17-year-old brain when I was obnoxious third stringer on the basketball team in high school, and just channeled that and became that guy again.
So you okay? So you went. That was the image you have of yourself from then.
Yeah. And then this my protagonist. He's a bit more clean up version of that. You know, he's how I wanted to be. I think when I was 17 years old.
But okay.
I was able to channel these people just by being that person again. I guess is the best way I can describe it.
How did you make one different from the? There's a different from the other in that age group. I mean, in what process was that, or is it just an extension of who that the main character?
Well, yeah, it's, like language is certainly one way to do it. I've got a surfer character, so he's using a lot of words that sort of speak to the surfer culture, and you can tell where he's coming from. When I talk about the inventor of basketball, Dr. James Naismith, I have him never using a contraction when he talks, so it can sound more proper. Just little kind of tells like that that kind of move a character off into one direction.
You're absolutely right. That is a real pro looking. That's a real pro thing. What you just said. There's a remake. Did you ever see True Grit?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Okay, you saw the John Wayne. You've got to watch the newer one with Jeff Bridges, and I don't know who the young lady. Maybe.
Yeah, that was about a few years ago. Is that right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that either. I'm taking vigorous notes here. Right?
It is. It's wonderful. It's so much better. I didn't read the book. I know it comes from a book, but I'm sure it comes from a book. But, it's the new one, obviously, based on how pop culture changes and how business changes, is going to be a lot more, a lot grittier, a lot truer, and a lot grittier. They should have called it truer grittierness or something. I noticed, I'm watching the movie, and I noticed, wow, no one uses a contraction. It takes place in the West, and no one used a contraction in the entire movie, except for maybe possessive. I said, that is brilliant. And I talked to some friends I know who saw, you see that? And they go, oh, yeah, I like that. Jeff Bridges is great. Well, doesn't it always sound like I'm putting down people I talk to? Doesn't it?
A resounding no comment here.
I had a girlfriend of mine. She said, like, a long time ago, and she said, she was like me, and she said, we're such snobs. And she was, she was right. But anyway, it's true. And I went, wow, did you notice? And they went, no, I didn't notice that. And I went, well, I guess that's good, because those of us who notice it know the gimmick and understand it at a deeper level. I think every book has a number of, every piece of art, I think, has to have levels. Let me tell you that much if you want to know what I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
You do, because you said that is a character thing. And that's called, in screenwriting, they call it a conceit, something that reveals part of your the character, and you only have it. It's yours.
I've got a junior college chess champion, a sequel named Jamal, and he is angry. Really pissed off all the time. So everything out of his mouth, it just reeks of anger. And that's his character development. And we get into why he's so angry and how he deals with it, you know, in the book. But that's another way you could take a character and make that character stand out.
Yes. And there are those little things, though, that really, I think, really give something depth. And when I learn, if I don't see them, if I'm reading a book or watching a movie that is based on a book, you're going to find, do you believe like I believe? I don't believe this. I seem to know this. I think that movies that are based on books are better than screenplays. And it's very rare to find a wonderful, have you seen the Cider House Rules movie?
I have. It's been a while.
Okay. I didn't read the book because I have problems reading John, whatever his name, I forgot his name. The way he writes, I had a problem. I tried to read Garp, and I couldn't do it. I just could. He just didn't. I don't know what it was. I couldn't get into his music. The music of, and I didn't watch the Cider House Rules for years because it's him again. I'd seen another thing he wrote made into a movie, and it was like, yeah, okay, fine. You know, so he's a good writer. He sells a lot of books, but I'm not. Then someone said to me, someone who's does not write, someone who got, you know, an appreciator of things, said, you should see the Cider House Rules. I'm like, don't tell me what to see. You know, and then one day it came on and I watched it and I went, this is, and it was written The screenplay is written by the author. I don't remember his name.
Is it John Irwin or Irvin? Is that who it is?
It's John Irwin. I don't know. It's something like that. Yeah, maybe it is Irwin Johns, maybe. I don't know. And I went, this is brilliant. Everything is in place. This is beautiful. And that's a word I really like to use no matter what the, you know, subject matter. Mm-hmm. You know, if something works in its entirety, a piece, I mean, it's beautiful. And, I think you should watch it again because it's got tons of those things we're talking about.
You talk about the motion picture now?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't.
Nothing. Glenn Close.
No, that's Garp.
Oh, that's what I thought you were referring to.
No.
Oh, you're talking about Cider House Rules.
Cider House Rules. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I thought I couldn't read Garp and the movie was just okay, you know, but I understood it. But Cider House Rules is, whoa.
Yeah, that was pretty well done for sure. I remember thinking a lot of it when I saw it the first time.
And I have to, you know, I'm the kind of guy, I got to watch movies like twice, sometimes three times. If I like a movie, I got to watch it. I don't get everything the first time. So, you know, books are different. You read back, you look, you know, you got time to think about it. Mm-hmm. Movies present themselves differently. And I got to, you know, and then I see things. And I go, wow, how did I not see that and see this and see that? Because, you know, nobody tells you, you only have an hour to read this book. Now go ahead. And what are you going to miss, right? An hour. But you're right. And when we got to this point, because we're talking about that character, see, those various things that happen. Now, do you, because you might not do this in the future. Did you say when you created this character, did you give him a profile in your head? Or is it, or in that genre, I guess you can't get too deep, right?
Well, you can, you just have to be careful with it, you know, kids have to be able to hook onto it, but kids are smarter than we think.
Yeah,
and I wrote it like they were little adults reading and seemed to work out okay.
And, there's also the things that are no one ever knows, which I love to put into books. Names mean something. Everything has a familiarity with the theme and the journey of the main character and dynamic character. I like to do that. And if somebody, and I think everybody catches this stuff. They just don't see it. If you ask them to, analyze it, not everybody is knows literary criticism, but and that's why when you told me the name of your main character, I asked you about the biblical reference.
Right, Ezekiel.
I mean, and I'm just like, wow, that one must have passed through the air.
Yeah.
Or did you hear it?
He was explicitly named after Jerry West, former Laker great.
Yeah, I remember that name.
Yeah, because he had a nickname that Chick Hearn gave him, which was Zeke from Cabin Creek. And so right. I always thought that was a cool name for a basketball player, and then it sort of fell into place. But another good example of what you're talking about is I have this antagonist who is Zeke's arch nemesis, and I named him Brock Decker.
Brock Decker.
And then Jiggy Jaguar, your friend and mine, when I told him that during an interview earlier this year,
what'd he say?
He said, Brock Decker, his name is his destiny.
Because he got a whole sense out of that name.
Yeah. So I felt good about that name for sure.
And yet, if I know Jiggy, it had something to do with a nightmare he had while he was on antibiotics.
You can't rule that out for sure.
Jeez, in a way, I admire people who are who just see everything kind of plainly because they, I guess they feel more secure. I think. As you'll see in defending your life, I'll give you one line from it. It's all about getting smarter.
Yeah, that is the truth.
And the way it's put into context is just beautiful.
Hey, I've got a day with Destiny, January 20th. I'm going to be in Hutchinson, Kansas, in studio with the Jigs.
You're going to Hutchinson, Kansas?
Yep, I'm going to do it.
Him and his promoters were supposed to send me there like a couple of years ago. They were going to send me there. I was going to do my live routine with, songs and talk and crap, and it never happened. but I've been in Kansas for other reasons. And you're going to go and are you passing through or are you just going there to be with Jiggy?
I'm going to be in Lawrence, Kansas. I'm doing research for the sequel. Okay. Maybe on campus there at University of Kansas, stalking Allen Fieldhouse and talking to some coaches and so forth. Also going to visit Dr. James Naismith's memorial nearby the campus. But I'm going to get in the car and drive 2 hours to the west. I'm going to sit with him in that studio, and it's going to get wild.
You got to – someone's got to remind me when that's going to be on. You know, now that you mention it, I think – I don't know if I wrote it down. I got an email from him. I forgot what day. He said, I'm on his show. He said, can you make it? This is – I forgot. I better write that one down. I said, write that one down. You know, I'm amazed sometimes at the simple things I forget and the complicated things I remember. Did that happen to you?
Yeah, there's medication for that, Frank.
No, medication, believe me, it just, well, I was going to say what other people would say about me. It just makes it worse. That's what people say about me. What? Tell me, forget about everything else other than you. And tell me what other thing you'd like to write, even though you don't know. But what do you see yourself think? You know, if I sat down and wrote that Western or, you know, or some kind of story that you place in a genre, that's always a good, great thing to do, you know? So I could take Hamlet and you make it into a Western or, you know, take the basic things. What serious adult area, mystery, science, you know, where would you really, do you think about that? I'm asking you, do you say, you know, I'm gonna try that one time?
Well, I want to write for as long as I'm able to. And so after I complete the sequel, I've already gotten this vision, and I don't want to sound like that guy, you know, but I've already gotten the word that my next book is going to be a young adult again, and it's going to be about cross country.
Cross country,
About a cross country runner. And, I've covered cross country as a sports writer, and those kids who run that, it's just an incredible sport. They endure so much pain, and they do it for the good of the team, and it's just such a wonderful experience. And I want to capture that, and I want to throw in some magical realism into it and build a good story around it. And I really want to showcase a runner and how he dealt with adversity and made it through to the finish line.
So is this an adult runner?
It's another YA. It's kind of my thing. I think that's the direction I'm going in. That's my next one.
You mean after this one?
Yeah, after the sequel. Yeah. It's going to be a young adult about a cross-country runner who has dealt a tough hand, and he's going to try to work his way through it. And I think that for the young reader to read that kind of stuff, and I think they look at stories and they try to figure out how they can apply it to their own lives and navigate the own issues that they're encountering.
And you're going to teach them to run away. No, I don't.
I'm teaching to run that course, which is around 3 miles, and get back to the starting line.
Okay, well, that's good. That's two books ahead. But what do you see if you're allowed to write? I don't know what you meant by that. I want to write as long as I can too. But what would you say? Like, boy, I'd love to, and forget about, you know, this will be a hit or this will be a big book. What one thing, if you have thought about it yet, would you like to sit and write for you that you hope you could share? There would be others who would pick it up one way or another. Is there a genre? Is there I don't know. What is there, a profile or what?
Well, you know, I have to say, I have not thought that far ahead. For me, it's just about the next book. So I don't know. Ask me again in 5 years, and I hope I can be on a show to answer it.
Yeah. I hope I don't have this show in 5 years.
You're having a good time, I can just tell.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I hope I'm sitting back going, yeah, well, the first check that came in on that series. I'm selling out is what I'm doing. No, I'm not. I find that's another thing, too, you know. Okay. Do you feel like you're old? I'm asking questions to a writer, and we're talking about writing here. This is Cotolo Chronicles. I haven't told anybody, but I'm sure if you're listening, you know this is Cotolo Chronicles. And, Craig Lehner, author Craig Lehner, and his pipe, you still have your beard and stuff?
Yes, sir, I do.
Yeah. So, did you ever think of, when was the last time you didn't have a beard?
A couple years ago.
Okay.
I started having a beard from like 1979 to about 2001.
Whoa, that's a long time. I could never keep my beard or mustache on that long.
Yeah, I trimmed it down to a goatee for a handful of years, cut it off one day, and then had the beard pretty much ever since.
Wow. So you're, obviously a bad word, attached to it?
Well, I feel comfortable. I get to hide behind it and nobody says anything.
Oh, wow. It's a mask.
It is a mask.
Wow. Okay. That wasn't my question though. Now I've steered to the right and my saloon doors are opening and closing and being bombarded by ideas and things are going through. What do you like to, what have you read? I'm thinking about my thing. What have you read lately? What have you read books, that you went, geez, I would have written that one.
Well, there's a book by Anne Lamott, that's called Bird by Bird, where she talks about her life and the writing process. And there's so much wisdom in that thing. I wish I had written that book, but boy, it sure is fun to read it at the same time.
Hey, I'll give you a great book about the artistry of growing into it, by Somerset Maugham. It's called The Summing Up.
I'm writing this down.
Yeah, this is the last book he wrote. I'm sure it's in paperback too, whatever. It's probably 1,600 copies on Amazon. 5 used, 25 almost used, 13 hardcover. In the old days, before net, the webs and stuff, there was a place in New York. You'd call them up and say, listen, I'm looking for a copy of this, right? And they'd find it and they'd give you a value of it based on, its availability now and who has it and who owns it, or how many copies there are out there. And I mentioned the summing up to someone who was supposedly in love with me. And that person went to that place. And I said, yeah, there's this place. I might, have them search for it. And they got me an original copy, although it was not signed by Somerset Maugham, which is a name that if I was born with, what could I do? I couldn't be, I don't work for the post office. Really? You're who? Maugham. Somerset Maugham.
Oh. Tell me about this book.
What's that?
Tell me about the book.
The book is, what's great about Somerset Maugham is that he's an artist. He was an artist. He wrote some great books. I don't know if you've read any of his stuff or seen movies made from things like, Of Human Bondage. Mm-hmm. Okay. But he's a privileged young man. I mean, he comes from a privileged, he's not a Charles Bukowski whose father beat him and he lived in the bad neighborhood and he had welts and he grew up in the horrors of the, he didn't rise to become, a person of letters, as they used to say, right? He's a pretty well-off guy. He doesn't even have to be an artist, but something inside of him said, you're not the same. And so he went on another path and was able to extract from people feelings and emotions that you would not ordinarily attribute to somebody who is entitled. And so this book, which is the last thing he wrote, he says, I'm going to sum it up. This is it. And I think every person who's a writer, who would be an artist, or what, should read this book. And a number of people who have taken my advice said, very good. So I've given you a bunch of stuff I think would be great for you.
I have a lot of homework to do, that's for
sure. Well, I don't look at it. Don't say it that way. That won't make you want to do it. You're going to want to do it, right?
Well, I'm pretty disciplined. Homework. I'll probably get to it at some point soon.
Yeah, you are. And you should use every bit of that for what you, as a writer. Listen to me. I'm the grandpa. Grandpa Word is telling you this. No, I don't mean to be pedantic. I'm just saying that, you should crack open a couple of those doors though,
Yeah, that's good advice, Frank.
Yeah, play with them. Play with some of those doors. Don't, because they're locked on the other side. Only you can open them from the inside. I mean, locked from the inside. So you got to play with some of them. You don't know. I think every writer has to be available to say, this is how good I am. This is how well I write. It will never get better than this. This is how well I write. That means to me, you've run through the gauntlet of every possible thing that couldn't be you and who came out on the other side. They beat everything else out of you. What came out on the other side was you. Then that means getting hit and shaking around some stuff.
Yeah. Deep stuff right there.
Well, you know, I could put it into a joke if, you know, we take all this stuff too. See, you and I should do this. We should even get like three guys on and we should have these little seminars.
Maybe a guy with a snare drum to do some rim shots too.
2019. Oh, I know guys who would do that too. And we should do that because Skype allows you, have more than one person, two people, three people.
The old Skyperoo, as the Jigster calls it.
The Jigster. Oh boy. Let's not go into the Jigster. He has always been the first guest of each beginning of each year since,
wow.
Since I know him. And last year he couldn't be. Last year he didn't tell me he was sick. And I promoted it and everything. And then he didn't even answer his phone. He just disappeared.
Well, that's a dick biter.
And I don't know about you, but when stuff like that happens with someone I know, I immediately think they died.
Mm.
The first thing, isn't that weird? Isn't that like sad? The first thing that comes to my mind is, oh my God, I hope he didn't die. She didn't die. When something goes wrong. That's obviously something embedded deeply in my childhood.
That goes way back for you for sure. In there,
have you been at any time in your life? Not that this is so personal, you don't have to tell me anything about it. Have you been in therapy?
No.
Okay.
I'm pretty well adjusted.
Those are the ones I worry about.
Yeah. No, I haven't had the pleasure.
Mm, okay. Some of us find it, you know, you gotta find a good shrink. And, I believe a good shrink is like a good guru. That's what I learned.
Yeah. Having a good mechanic for your car is the same thing. You know, you take it into someone who knows more than you.
You're right. But not just knows more than you, but knows when you're done. That's what I learned about shrinks and people who keep you, I mean, a good shrink is like a good guru, and a good guru says, you're done. Get out of here. They kick you out. Go. You learn now, go. You learn things, you had a teacher, now go, live it, do it, make mistake, go on.
Yeah, the good ones push out the door when it's time.
Yeah, yeah. And by no means am I saying that as a lead in to, I guess we're done for now.
Hey, can I plug the website?
I want you to plug anything you can right now again, and we'll do the whole book selling thing in the last minute. Go.
This was never about basketball.com. Pretty basic. You know, that's where you can find
me. Let's say it slower for some of my less than intelligent listeners because they write things down so quickly.
Okay. It's five words and there's no spaces in between. This was never about basketball.com.
And you know, I don't just say that for them because I do the same thing. I hear something on television or I hear something and I go to write it down. And I went, as I'm writing it, I'm forgetting it. Write this down. Dr. Fablianic told us all. So yeah, this was never about basketball, right? Did I get that? Is that it?
You nailed it, Frank.
Okay. And the website?
That is my website.
There's no spaces or underscores, right?
Yeah, right. Just five words in a row without the spaces.
It's a .com. Are you going to have a website for each of your books or just, have a Craig Lehner .com?
Yeah, I think when the second one comes out, I've talked to my book producer about this, and we're just going to make it craiglehner.com and route the two books to that website.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
You tell them.
So it's available as a softcover and an ebook and also an audiobook too, believe it or not.
Right. You had somebody, you did it? No, somebody did it.
Yeah, somebody did it. A 24-year-old voice actor named Josh Powers who completely nailed it.
Yeah.
It's 26 voices, but yeah, that's another show.
Absolutely. See, I could never read my own book. I couldn't read anybody's book because I'd change it as I went along. You know, I'm like this existential monster, you know? But anyway, in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, this is the book you got to give if you know a teen. And we're talking male or female here.
Well, I think either way.
Yes.
Yeah. And adults who have read the book, including those who are not related to me, have said that they couldn't put it down.
See? You see? This is why I want everybody to go out there and get along with it. You could also get any of mine over there, Lulu, or they know. I feel like I'm telling them the same junk all over again. I'm going to – oh, you don't have – see, I could send you – see, I could send you and gift you for the holiday season, but it would have to be a digital. You don't like them, huh? You don't want to read them on the digitals?
Huh? I have a digital one of those Kindle things, but I prefer the soft cover or hard cover. But...
yeah, but sometimes you know, I have ones I haven't put into any kind of analog version, so I can't get you some books.
I will graciously accept any gift you want to send my way, Frank.
Okay, great. Okay, I'm gonna let's write this one down. Write this down, Craig.
You've got homework to do.
Yeah, and I'm gonna get you for being so kind and coming on and putting up with me in this. Craig is going to get, so you could even hear on this show, you even hear me right. Listen.
There's something going down over there. It might be writing.
I'm going to send you a book I'd like you to read. Unfortunately, it's only in, it's a serious one. Can I do that?
Sure.
I'm upcoming. I know I can do that. May I do that? Just do that book. Okay. I'm going to send you a book that you can download. And then, if you download one of those books, you can print it out. Right?
Could do that, I think. I think you can.
Then you could read hard copy. By golly, there's a way out of everything, isn't there? Thanks again, Craig. And certainly at such short notice, because I know I didn't give you any notice. But as you know, who needs notice to be on the show, right?
Frank, I appreciate the time. And it's a really good conversation. I don't have this kind of conversation with anybody else in my life.
Well, I'm happy then. And that's why writers need to talk.
Yes. I look forward to being back.
And you will. Have a very happy holiday. Say hello to all your relatives, living or dead, and have a happy holiday and a great new year. And I'll send you a bunch of junk and stuff, and we'll see what the hell happens. All right.
Thanks, sir. Take good care, Frank.
Stay well. Stay safe.
Bye bye.
Good night. Look at that. Craig took us right up to. Is there 6 minutes left? I don't care. Who wants to stay for 6 minutes? Let's get out of here. Let's get out of here. I got other things to do, as you know. Right? You do too. Craig gets a book. Craig gets a book. Give me a piece of hair. I got it here. I got, I got right here. Scrap paper. Scrap paper. Always keep paper around. Scrap paper. Let's see. Anybody else who wants to, wants to read my books, go get them. Or send me something, and I can buy you one if you return. We do trade of something. So, you know, there's things to do. fcatola@yahoo.com. That's where you can get me. And we hope to be around. I'm going to write this down. I'm still writing things down as I do that. Well, we hope to be around next time. Oh, no, we are going to be around next time. Don't forget. That's it. See, I almost forgot. Write this down quick. Roll call from the Baumgarten, the 27th of December, right here live with the Artist D. Be there. Good night, Mrs. Erstwhile, wherever you may be located. Thank you, Craig, and everybody else listening, whether you write or not. Whatever you do, do it, and do it plenty. I'll leave you now. Why? Nothing more to say.